This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
What if I told you that on a single Tuesday in July, the entire global future of artificial intelligence just like splintered into three completely different realities?
Yeah, not over the course of a decade either.
Right. Not through a slow trickle of white papers or, you know, early prototypes, but in one incredibly dense 24-hour period.
It's wild to think about.
It really is. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at an exclusive daily briefing provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, a former lawmaker. And the focus of this briefing is dissecting that exact Tuesday, specifically July 15th, 2026.
It really is a phenomenal snapshot in time. I mean, when you pull apart the events of this single day, you aren't just looking at tech news.
No, not at all.
You are essentially looking at a microcosm of the entire global war for AI dominance, for capital, and ultimately for absolute control of the information we consume.
And our mission today, for you listening, is to connect the dots between three seemingly separate events in China that perfectly illustrate this current reality.
Because they really are connected.
Right. We are looking at a fascinating, almost contradictory tug of war between wild open source expansion on a global scale and strict, unrelenting government lockdown domestically.
Yeah, the contrast is sharp.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because to understand the landscape of AI right now, we really can't start with the code. We have to follow the money.
Always follow the money.
Exactly. We need to talk about the $74 billion elephant in the room.
Right. And we are starting with a massive financial shockwave here.
Yeah.
The Chinese AI company DeepSeek.
Yeah, so according to the briefing from lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, DeepSeek is officially in a new funding round. And the numbers being thrown around here are just, well, they're staggering.
Oh, absolutely.
They are negotiating a valuation of roughly 5,000 billion yuan. And for context, that translates to about 74 billion U.S. dollars.
That is a massive valuation.
And they are aiming to raise around $1.5 billion in fresh capital right now. But I have to ask, you know, is this just another tech bubble?
I mean, it's a fair question.
Right. $74 billion for a company that, frankly, built its entire reputation on giving its products away for free.
Well, it sounds like a bubble until you look at the velocity of that number.
Okay, what do you mean by velocity?
So this $74 billion valuation, it represents a 40% jump from their valuation just 2 months prior.
Wait, 2 months?
2 months. You simply do not see that kind of growth curve in a mature market unless an absolute paradigm shift is occurring.
Wow.
And of course, this is all setting the stage for their IPO plans, which are slated for late 2026 or maybe 2027, with the location still being heavily debated between mainland China and Hong Kong.
A 40% jump in 60 days? I mean, that is the kind of momentum that keeps executives in Silicon Valley staring at the ceiling at 3 a.m.
Oh, they are definitely losing sleep over this. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this isn't just about a Chinese tech company getting rich.
Right.
It's about immense structural pressure being applied directly to the U.S. frontier labs, companies like OpenAI and Anthropic.
Because they're the incumbents.
It's exactly. DeepSeek has built its reputation on low-cost, high-efficiency, open-weight models. They are aggressively pushing down the baseline costs of AI computation across the board.
Wait, before we go further into the economics of this, let's clarify the terminology for anyone listening who maybe isn't living and breathing this stuff every single day.
Good idea.
You mentioned open weight models. I hear open source all the time in tech. What is the difference there? Because they aren't the same thing, right?
No, they aren't. And it's a crucial distinction. Open source traditionally means a company publishes the raw code, the training data, the architecture, literally everything.
So anyone can see exactly how the software was built from scratch.
Right. Open weight is different. With an open weight model, the company releases the finished pre-trained model, the neural network, with all its billions of learned connections or weights, but they don't necessarily release the proprietary data they use to train it.
Oh, I see. Or the exact training code, I assume.
Exactly. They keep the secret sauce hidden.
So if I'm understanding the analogy here, it's like giving someone a highly trained master chef who can cook anything you want, but you flat out refuse to give them the chef's culinary school notes or the secret family recipes that made them so good in the first place.
That is a perfect way to look at it. You get the capability, but not the recipe.
Right.
And by releasing these highly capable open weight models, DeepSeek is putting a massive squeeze on the American giants, specifically regarding token pricing and, crucially, retaining their developers.
And again, just to make sure we're all on the same page, token pricing is how these companies actually make their money, right?
Exactly. When a developer builds an app using, say, OpenAI's technology, they pay OpenAI a tiny fraction of a cent for every token, which is basically a piece of a word that the AI processes.
Okay, that makes sense.
The traditional business model for these U.S. frontier labs was to spend billions on server compute, train a massive proprietary model, keep it completely locked down, and charge a premium for API access to recoup those massive costs.
And DeepSeek is just blowing that up.
DeepSeek is fundamentally challenging that underlying business model, yeah.
It makes me think of the airline industry, honestly.
How so?
Well, it's like DeepSeek is a budget airline that suddenly figured out how to offer first-class service at economy prices.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
They are just eating up market share by undercutting the incumbents. And it really begs the question, if they are practically giving away this level of efficiency, how long can the legacy giants maintain their premium pricing?
That is the exact anxiety rippling through the U.S. market right now. When a highly capable open-weight model is available for a fraction of the cost, developers will naturally migrate to the cheaper option to run their apps.
Why wouldn't they? It's just good business.
Right. It forces the premium U.S. players into a corner. They either have to drastically slash their own profit margins to compete, or they have to prove that their top-tier closed models are exponentially better than DeepSeek's.
Not just a little bit better.
Exactly. Not just slightly better, but vastly superior. And that gap, frankly, is closing every day.
So DeepSeek shows how China is maneuvering to capture global developer wallets and disrupt financial markets. But money is really only one kind of power.
That's very true.
If you want to see how this technology is trying to capture geopolitical hearts and minds, we have to look at our second major event of July 15th. We are transitioning from capital power to infrastructural power.
Yes, and this is where we look at how AI is actively being weaponized, or perhaps diplomatized is a better word, in international relations.
We have to talk about Mazu. For anyone who hasn't seen the headlines, Mazu is China's open source weather large model.
Right.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Weather prediction might not sound as flashy as a chatbot that can write a Python script or generate a video, but the real world application here is incredible.
It really is a game changer.
On this exact same day, July 15th, lawyer Kunjin Kim's briefing highlights that Mazu was actively deployed in Pakistan to provide early warnings for the monsoon season.
Yeah, that's huge.
They used it to catch monsoon signals much earlier than traditional methods, allowing local authorities to issue warnings far ahead of time.
Wait, so is an open source weather app basically the new diplomatic handshake?
It absolutely is. And frankly, it's a brilliant strategic move. This proves that open source AI is moving way past simple developer market share.
It's leaving the garage, so to speak.
Right. It's no longer just about getting some random programmers in a garage to use your code. It is becoming actual, tangible public infrastructure influence abroad.
I hear that, but let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
Is giving a neighboring country a really good weather app actually soft power? Like, it sounds like fantastic public relations, sure, but how does giving away free weather data translates to actual geopolitical leverage?
It translates to leverage because you are fundamentally changing the infrastructure they rely on for survival.
Survival?
Yes. To understand this, you have to look at how traditional meteorology works. For decades, predicting the weather relied heavily on massive, multi-million dollar supercomputers.
And they run incredibly complex physics simulations. They calculate fluid dynamics and thermodynamics in the atmosphere. It requires immense computational power and takes a long time to run.
Right. It's just crunching raw, heavy math.
Exactly. Mazu, on the other hand, skips the physics equations entirely.
Really? How does it do that?
It uses a large AI model that has been trained on decades of historical weather data. Instead of calculating the physics, it recognizes the patterns.
Oh, wow.
Because it's just running inference, you know, pattern recognition. It can make predictions vastly faster than a supercomputer, and often with surprising accuracy.
That's fascinating.
So by giving this technology to Pakistan, China isn't just handing them a shiny new app. They are upgrading their entire national early warning system.
Which means it's saving lives. It's protecting their agriculture from flooding.
Precisely. When a foreign nation relies on your artificial intelligence for its disaster response, for its food security, for the basic safety of its citizens, well, that creates a deep infrastructural reliance.
Yeah, they can't just uninstall it.
Right, they become dependent on your tech stack, your data formats, your future updates. China is cementing a tie that goes far deeper than a traditional trade agreement.
It's exporting an absolute public good. It makes them look like global saviors, providing next-generation tech to nations that maybe couldn't afford their own meteorological supercomputers.
Exactly.
But this is where the narrative takes a massive jarring turn.
It really does.
Because while China is exporting these highly capable open source models globally to build influence, domestically, on the exact same day, they completely slam the brakes on consumer AI.
The contrast is genuinely striking. It's a total domestic paradox.
Let's look at the timeline. July 15th, 2026 marks the official implementation of the Anthropomorphic Interaction Management Interim Measures.
That's a mouthful.
It is. Yeah. This is China's first national-level regulation specifically targeting AI that acts or talks like a human. And the rules laid out in lawyer Kung-Jin Kim's briefing are incredibly strict.
Unbelievably strict, yeah.
We are talking about mandatory safety assessments, mandatory algorithm registration, what the government there calls filing, real name ID checks for all users, strict content rating management, and mandatory parental consent for any user under 14 years old.
And we should clarify for the listeners, this wasn't just a quiet piece of legislation going into effect with a long, you know, generous grace period.
No, not at all.
There were immediate, highly visible casualties on the internet that very day.
Right. To comply with these new rules, two of the biggest tech giants in the country had to basically pull the plug on major features. ByteDance's Dubo platform and Alibaba's Tongyi Kanwen both permanently shut down their user-created AI agents on July 15th.
Just shut them down.
Yeah, the companies announced that users had until October to back up their data, and after that, everything is wiped from the servers.
To be clear, they did leave the basic Q&A features intact. You can still ask the AI to summarize a document or, you know, write a formal email.
The boring stuff.
Right, the utilitarian stuff. But the ability for users to create, customize, and converse with their own human-like AI agents, personalities they might have spent months interacting with, mm-hmm. that was completely terminated to align with the start date of this new regulation.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like building the most incredible playground in the world with the best slides, the highest swings, state-of-the-art jungle gyms, and then overnight putting heavy steel padlocks on all the gates and demanding a state-approved background check just to use the sandbox.
That's a very vivid way to put it, but it's accurate.
Why would a nation invest billions of dollars in leading the AI race just to aggressively lock the most engaging features away from its own citizens?
Because for the Chinese government, domestic stability is always the ultimate priority, far above technological novelty.
Okay.
This regulation highlights a fundamental difference in philosophy compared to the West. What we are seeing here is a system of absolute pre-registration and pre-control.
Meaning they want to approve it before anyone sees it.
Exactly. The government wants to vet the algorithm, mathematically verify the identity of the user, and assess the safety of the interactions before the product ever reaches the public sphere in any meaningful way.
So it's not about punishing bad actors after they do something wrong, like, you know, suing a company after a data breach or something.
Right. It's proactive, not reactive.
It's about engineering the environment to make sure nothing politically or socially unpredictable can happen in the first place.
Exactly. Think about the psychology of anthropomorphic AI for a second. AI that mimics human emotion, conversation, and relationship building is inherently unpredictable.
Because humans are unpredictable.
Yes. Users form very real emotional attachments to these agents. They treat them like therapists, friends, or confidants.
Oh, definitely.
They share deeply personal information, political frustrations, and social anxieties with them. In a governmental system that relies on strict, centralized information control, the idea of hundreds of millions of citizens having unmonitored, deeply personal conversations with unregulated, emotionally resonant AI agents, well, that is seen as a massive, unacceptable societal risk.
So they just shut it down.
So they chose absolute control over unrestricted innovation.
And what's wild is that this control isn't just limited to the cloud. It's not just about stopping you from accessing a specific website or a remote server. They are expanding the scope of this crackdown to the physical hardware itself.
Yeah, this is where it gets very sci-fi.
I want you, the listener, to think about the smartphone sitting in your pocket right now. You probably assume you own the hardware and you control what it does. But this regulation fundamentally changes that concept.
Yes. This brings us to the concept of on-device AI, or endpoint AI. And frankly, this is one of the most critical developments in the entire briefing from lawyer Kunjin Kim.
Because also, on July 15th, the Cyberspace Administration of China, the CICAC, announced the very first official registration of 7 on-device generative AI models.
Right.
And we aren't just talking about obscure local software brands here. The list specifically names the foundational AI systems built into the phones themselves. It lists Apple Intelligence, Huawei Xiaomi, and Oppo Andes GPT.
To understand why this is such a seismic shift, you have to look at how the architecture of AI is evolving.
Okay, break that down for us.
For the last few years, almost all heavy AI processing happened in the cloud. You ask ChatGPT a question on your phone. Your phone sends that text data over the internet to a massive server farm in another state. The server does all the heavy thinking, and then it sends the text answer back to your screen.
Right, the phone is basically just a walkie-talkie.
Exactly. But the massive new push from companies like Apple and Google is to have smaller, highly efficient AI models live and run directly on the microchips inside your smartphone without ever needing an internet connection.
Which is theoretically amazing for the consumer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's vastly better for privacy because your data never leaves your hand, and it's much faster because there's no network latency.
Absolutely. It's a huge upgrade.
But in this regulatory environment, it creates a massive legal bottleneck. So if I'm understanding this right, if a phone's built-in, on-device AI doesn't pass this CAC state registration, does that feature just become a digital brick, even if it literally never connects to the internet?
This raises an important question about the limits of jurisdictional power over personal property.
Right.
The CAPCAE is clearly stating that endpoint AI falls entirely under their regulatory net. Basic smartphone functionality, things like asking your phone to summarize your local notes, organizing your local photo album using AI, or having the phone draft a text message based on your tone.
Just everyday tasks.
Right. That now lives or dies by government registration in China. It does not matter if the processing happens entirely on a local silicon chip isolated inside your pocket. If the model isn't registered, age-gated, and approved by the state, that feature cannot legally operate on a device sold or functioning in that market.
That is just wild. It fundamentally changes what a smartphone is. It goes from being a universal, generic tool that you own to a state-sanctioned utility that only operates within the bounds of local compliance.
It really does.
And that brings us to the grand finale of this briefing. We've looked at the influx of capital, the diplomatic exportation of models, the software crackdown, and now the hardware crackdown. So what does this all mean? Let's bring in the final analysis provided by lawyer Kunjin Kim.
According to lawyer Kunjin Kim's commentary, July 15, 2026, will be remembered as the day the global AI regulatory landscape officially splintered into 3 distinct incompatible paths.
3 different paths.
Yes, we are looking at a global regulatory trilemma. Okay, let's break those 3 paths down, exactly as lawyer Kunjin Kim outlined them, because this affects anyone building or using this tech right now. Path number 1 is China.
China is defined by the philosophy of pre-control. As we just discussed in depth, this means mandatory algorithm registration, real name ID verification, and strict age verification before a service can even be turned on.
The state is the bouncer at the door.
Exactly. The state acts as the ultimate proactive gatekeeper prior to launch.
Then we have path number 2, the European Union.
The EU is defined by the philosophy of post-control. They are heavily focusing on transparency, copyright compliance, and labeling obligations.
So they let you in, but they watch you closely.
Right. The EU AI Act's rules on general purpose AI transparency are slated to take effect very soon, on August 2, 2026. Their approach is essentially to let the models exist and launch, but strictly police how they are used in society.
Making sure you know it's an AI.
Exactly. Ensuring users always know when they're interacting with an AI and holding companies legally accountable for the outputs and biases after the fact.
And finally, path number 3, the United States.
The US is currently defined not by a unified strategy, but by internal conflict.
Shocking.
I know, right? Rather than a cohesive national framework like the EU or China, the US is dealing with the federal government and individual state governments fiercely fighting for jurisdictional preemption.
It's just a mess over there.
It is. You have a messy patchwork of state laws, California doing one thing, Texas doing another, all trying to regulate AI, while Washington debates federal oversight. This creates a deeply uncertain, highly litigious environment for developers.
3 totally different, fundamentally incompatible philosophies: pre-control, post-control, and internal conflict. And lawyer Kyungjin Kim issued a very urgent warning in this briefing, specifically aimed at foreign businesses.
Yeah, this is a critical takeaway.
For example, South Korean firms trying to operate globally. If you are a foreign company operating any kind of chatbot or user agent in the Chinese market right now, you must immediately ensure you have completed algorithm registration and implemented age verification.
You cannot wait on this.
Right. If you haven't, you are facing imminent service suspensions and massive financial penalties. Ignorance of this July 15th implementation is not a valid legal defense.
It perfectly emphasizes how hopelessly fragmented the internet is about to become.
Yeah.
For the last two decades, the tech industry operated on this beautiful assumption that you could build one software product in a garage and ship it globally to billions of people overnight.
Write once, run anywhere.
Exactly. But that era is officially over. Building a global AI product is no longer just a computer science coding challenge. It's a geopolitical minefield.
Oh, for sure.
An AI model that is perfectly legal to run in California might face crippling fines in Paris under the EU AI Act and then be outright banned and blocked at the hardware level in Beijing.
You literally have to design different brains for your software depending on the GPS coordinates of the user?
Exactly. The compliance costs alone are going to completely reshape the industry. Small startups might not be able to afford to be global from day one anymore because navigating three different regulatory realities requires massive legal teams. We might see a return to highly regionalized technology.
Which is just a complete reversal of the internet's original promise of a borderless connected world. We've covered an immense amount of ground today.
We really have.
We started by looking at DeepSeek's massive $74 billion valuation, unpacking how open-weight efficiency is actively threatening the profit margins and dominance of U.S. legacy tech.
Right.
Then we saw how China is taking open source tools, like the Mozu weather model, skipping physics equations for fast pattern recognition, and exporting them to places like Pakistan to build real infrastructural soft power.
And then the jarring pivot to the domestic front, where the exact same government is enforcing the anthropomorphic interaction management interim measures.
Say that 10 times fast.
Right? Forcing massive companies to instantly shut down user-created AI agents and demanding real name verification to prioritize social stability over unchecked innovation.
Right down to government regulators dictating what the actual silicon microchip in an Apple or Huawei device is legally allowed to think about while it's sitting in your pocket.
It's wild.
It is a stunning display of how complex and how deeply intertwined this technology has become with our daily lives.
It touches high finance, international diplomacy, human sociology, and endpoint hardware engineering all at the exact same time.
It really does. And it leaves us with one incredibly provocative thought to mull over as we wrap up today. If basic AI functions require state approval to operate entirely on a local device without ever touching the cloud, well, how long before we see geofenced smartphones?
Ooh, that's a scary thought.
Right. Imagine a world just a few years from now where the actual hardware capabilities, the very brain of your phone, changes its personality, restricts its own knowledge, or shuts down entirely the moment you cross an international border.
It's a fascinating and, frankly, slightly chilling technological reality we are rapidly approaching.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the information around you. Check your phone settings, and we'll see you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.